Welcome on into Jay Bird Watch podcast of Jay's Journal. There is a new face slash old face in the room, but let's first start by welcoming in Craig Borden and Chris Key, the faces of the last 2 months of Jay Bird Watching. Gentlemen, how are you guys doing?
You mean the slow decline into the baseball list world of
yeah. Well, see, yeah. Let me tell you something, because I found out, like, I was some run-of-the-mill AAA player, but getting cut from the team and finding out on Twitter that Adam was coming back. Nobody even thought to send me a message. I had to find out on Twitter that
hey,
I'm just getting
don't feel too bad.
Aside.
That's how the bass player Van Halen found out he was also kicked out of Van Halen. Just saying.
Hey, I'm sure that doesn't make me feel any better.
Actually, if anything, it should make you feel kind of cool, because I'm sure players find out about it all the time through social media.
Well, exactly. Now I know what they go through.
Now you know what they go through for the return of the Mac, the return of the new daughter, or the new father of two daughters now. Adam Corsair, welcome back, man. How are you doing?
Doing well. It's great to be back. I'm sorry, Chris, that you had to find that out on Twitter. I'm sorry I just declared that I'm coming back. Like, it was more like,
how dare you take your spot back?
I'm back.
You need to earn it, man.
I do.
You'll be our Randall Grichuk. It'll be okay.
Oh, God. I hope I'm better than that. I would like to be the Cavan. Please let me be the Cavan. Yeah. We're going to talk about Cavan today for sure. There wouldn't be an Adam Corsair show without Cavan. But look.
Well, what about Cavan, man? There's nothing to talk about.
Oh, there's a lot to talk about when it comes to Cavan.
He's missed like 4 months. There's plenty for him to talk about.
There's a lot to talk about.
Let me get this off my chest. We're going to get a rant, and I'm sure we will.
We're going to fill the next 2 months of strike with Adam just filling in the last 3 months that he's missed.
There you go. There you go.
It's going to be the let me tell you what grinds my gears episodes, right?
Oh, nothing grinds my gears. Not yet. Well, I mean, no baseball, but there's no baseball right now anyway. But look, I just want to say I haven't been on the show since September, late September, mid-September, I forget which. But you guys have held it down. I appreciate it. I appreciate the time off. In the beginning, I'm sure you guys minus Brendan know about, you know, having kids. It's a roller coaster. It's a ride, especially when they're babies. It's a huge adjustment period, right? And sleep comes at a premium. We are very fortunate enough that our new daughter is a very good sleeper. In fact, we put her down now at 7. She's good until about 5 a.m. with maybe one wake up.
Wow, that's really good.
Yeah, so she's good.
It's so lucky.
Oh, she is very, very good at sleeping, which makes me very happy. That being said, it's given us time to really, you know, settle back in, catch up on the sleep, fall into a routine. So hence why I'm back now. And I would be remiss if I didn't thank Chris for filling in the void and, you know, making it very apparent that I am the weakest link on the show. I appreciate it. I appreciate you filling in. And now I have to fill in your shoes that you've left. And I hope that, you know, the invitation, at least I'm going to speak for everyone, is always open. You can come on the show anytime you want, man. 100%. It's cool with me.
Cool.
And let people, you know, sort of reinforce the notion that you're the man. So I appreciate you guys holding it down. I appreciate the time off. And let's get kicking, because there's a lot of Blue Jays talk that we need to cover. At least I do. I know there's a lot.
We already did it once, man.
Listen, there's a. I have not expressed not making the playoffs on the show. Okay,
oh,
I have not been able to express that.
Well,
so,
The main topic after welcoming you back was, Adam, kick us off by letting us know your impressions of the end of the season, and the signing so far in the lockout. So why don't we start there? Why don't you start venting about the way the season ended, and then we can kind of, I don't know, maybe do like a revisit and a reset to where we're at now. So start with the missing the playoffs bit, and we'll go from there.
Sure. I don't know chronologically who, you know, how this all fell into place when it comes to them not making the playoffs. But I will say this, it's not any individual's fault that they didn't make the playoffs. I mean, this is, with all intents and purposes, given the fact that George Springer wasn't on the team, for a good portion of the season. Barrios came in at the deadline. Ryu underperformed. Cavan was playing out of position. The only real consistency we had on this team is Semien being awesome, Ray mm-hmm. being awesome, and Vlad being awesome. Bo had his slumps here and there. Obviously, Graychuk was great in the beginning, and then he became Randall Graychuk again. Lourdes took a while to heat up. Manoah didn't come until a little, I don't want to say late into the season, just so he didn't start off the full year. And obviously, the destructiveness of Nate Pearson didn't help anything with this team. So, given all of that, this team still was in it, right? And if you can picture this team fully healthy, even with the new additions, this is going to be a very, very, very good team. I do not care what people think about the lack of continuity and the lack of familiar names on this team. And Chris, I'm sorry about Robbie Ray, but this team is still very, very good. And the fact that they barely missed the playoffs sort of speaks volumes. I was disappointed. I'm sure we all were disappointed that they didn't make the playoffs. But there was some decision-making processes that we can point to, maybe from Charlie Montoyo, that, you know, late in games or the bullpen additions or the bullpen decisions, I should say, that cost the team some games. And yeah, you can do ifs and buts, but the fact is that they didn't make it. But I think when you look at 2021, given what 2020 gave us, this team overperformed, right? They exceeded expectations. And I know we walked into the season saying it's playoffs or bust, but I'm still very proud of this team. I'm still very happy with the production that they were able to put out on the field. Now going into 2022, maybe I'm speaking both sides out of my ass right now, but with 2022, I do think it's playoffs or bust. You do not make these moves unless you have a clear and, you know, determined game plan to make the playoffs. So I'm not saying World Series or bust, but I don't even think wild card should be the goal. You have to make the playoffs. You have to win this division. And I think they're doing everything that they can in order to do that. And I'm sure there's a lot to talk about, but guys, the Rays are still the Rays, but from where I'm standing, the Red Sox got worse. The Yankees haven't done anything.
Mm-hmm.
And the Orioles are the Orioles. So the Blue Jays definitely have
a door, just saying.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. They have a path to get there.
Right.
And I do think today they are better than the Red Sox. I do think today they are better than the Yankees. And I do think today they could go toe-to-toe with the Rays. Yeah, so there's a lot to be happy with when it comes to this team.
Most definitely. I think, Craig, Chris, we can revisit a little bit just kind of to pick up where Adam was saying about the end of the season and keep that discussion going a little bit more. I believe at the time, Adam, just based on when you said your daughter was born on September 23rd, we were just fresh off of the Blue Jays losing 2-3 to the Rays at Tropicana Field, which we all agreed was the series that they needed to at least not get swept, which they did. And then they were going into Minnesota for 4 games where they split it 2-2. And I believe, Craig, correct me if I'm wrong, and Chris, you too, that when we recorded that episode after you were first on paternity leave, Adam, we said, you know what? Still a path here for them to make the playoffs, because we recorded, I believe, the night before the Yankees series started, which was obviously the big one that they needed to at least win 2-3. They didn't. But I believe, Chris, Craig, we were saying on that episode on the Monday that losing to Minnesota would very much be a spot that we would go back and look at as the season wound down and be like, okay, if you win one more against the Twins, we would have at least been in a tiebreaker. Or I think we were saying the bullpen back in May. After all the injuries started to happen and people went down, the bullpen really screwed them up and they were able to get their footing. I don't know. One of you can run with that. Chris, go for it.
Yeah, there's so many, looking back on it now, there's so many things that you could say, like, was it the bullpen? Was it, hell, was it that game in Kansas City where Robbie Ray just couldn't find the strike zone? Like, you could go all the way back to that point. You could go back to the Semien throw that everybody likes to go back to. You could go back to, I don't know, there's a handful of whatever, but at the same time, the way I'm looking at it now is the only thing that's going to make these players, and especially the players, but I think what it's going to make Shapiro and Atkins is so much hungrier to get to the point where they can like leap over that fence and they can just bust through the door. And like, for everything that has kind of come out in the last week and a half or so since we've talked, like, we were apparently right in the thick of things for Corey Seager.
Yep.
This whole Freddie Freeman thing might actually have legs to it. And like, if they get Freddie Freeman, like, there's room to go more as well. Like, they recognize that there needs to be more. And I think that ownership recognizes the potential for having, I'll take the words right out of Shapiro's mouth, a behemoth team. And there's recognition on all sides right now of what's happening. And I think there was a tweet, somebody had a picture of Teoscar in the batting cages yesterday. Mm-hmm. I think it was Rob Longley.
Yeah.
Had it. And Teoscar was saying, like, these next 4 or 5 years in Toronto are going to be really special. Like, the players see it. The players see it. The players know it. Does. And as long as, and this is the difference between, I think, and like, the difference between Shapiro and Atkins and what's happening with ownership now. Like, ownership got a taste in 2015, 2016. Like, what could happen if this plan actually goes well and everything goes according to plan? And like, I think ownership and Ed Rogers recognizes this, and they're going to do whatever it takes to supplement this team and help with that progression in any way they can. There was also some talk of upgrades to the stadium as well. And like, it's all part of it with what's going on right now. Not to ramble too far and get too far off track, but like, it's all part of it. And like, for the people that still are stuck on Anthopolis and like the Braves winning the World Series, the Braves winning the World Series this year didn't help with that whole narrative either. Like, that was the past. Like, this is what's happening now. And like, would I rather be the Atlanta Braves who picked up a bunch of guys on 1 year contracts that are going to be like, what are they going to be next year? We don't know what they're going to be, really.
They might not be back.
Or do you want to be like, here's a question I'll pose to all of you guys, which I think I know the answer. Would you rather be the Atlanta Braves right now coming off the World Series, not knowing what the hell is going to happen with your team next year? Or would you rather be without a World Series like the Toronto Blue Jays right now, but all of this potential, all of this money to spend, all of these good things circulating around the team with a front office that I have full and total trust in, which I can't say that I had 3 years ago, even maybe 4 years ago, probably was a better timeline on that. But like, what position would you rather be in? Craig, you take that. Like, as a fan, where would you rather be? A Blue Jays fan, knowing that we have all of this potential with multiple World Series appearances in the prospective future, or the Atlanta Braves, where they just won a World Series, but who the hell is playing the outfield for them next year?
You want me to put this into a summary for you? Because I think I got the analogy for you.
Go for it.
You want to be the one-off year Braves like you have right now, or do you want to build the freaking team in the 90s just in the 2020s?
Yeah.
You know, that's the cusp we're on, boys. I really do feel that confident with the fact that regardless of what's going on, we have two amazing pitchers guaranteed and locked up for the next 4 or 5 years. We have an offense that's going to be a juggernaut with Springer, Vladdy, Bo, Teoscar for the next couple of years, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. You know they're going to find a way to sprinkle something in that to make sure that 5-year window matches up with those pitchers, whether that's Freddie Free or whoever else that might be. But to that point, I think that's the logical analogy there. You can be the team like the 1995 to what? 2002, I think, was the Braves were basically the NL East champions constantly. And even I know they only won Yankees Worlds. In there. Yeah, I know they only won one World Series in that time frame. But the fact that you're going to be ready to go to the ballpark for the better part of 5 years to a decade and know that you might have a winning team, or just, hey, you know, mail all the check in, be the Florida Marlins and tear it down the next year for this season. I love where this team's going. And I don't think any Blue Jays fan can't be excited, regardless of the fact that we literally just missed it to the point where Adam was going with a conversation a minute ago.
Go for it,
Adam. If I'm being honest, as a fan, I'd rather have just won a World Series.
Me too.
Ooh.
I'd rather.
I just can't go back to the years of, oh.
I hear you. But I'm of the philosophy I've always have been. If you could trade away all the top prospects in the system and guarantee a World Series, let's go. Do not.
So
care.
To that point, though, you do that right now, you get us a World Series and you have everybody locked up. So you're going to eventually backfill those prospects again.
Yeah, I mean,
by the time
theory,
these
right,
contracts
right.
that we have right now, you're locking and loading again, right?
Right, right, right. So in that regard, yes. But I'm just saying, if given the opportunity, I like a slow burn. Like, this is as a fan, as an organization, and what the prudent thing is to do is exactly what the Blue Jays are doing. I have no issue with it. But, I mean, the last time they won a World Series is when they were in 1993. I was seven.
I was one.
Yeah, what do I experience at seven? Nothing. I care more about Batman, right? So I just want to experience a World Series as an adult. And if that means guaranteed I would have last season with this team, I would have taken it. Personally, I would have taken it. But there's no wrong answer, right? Because what they're doing is something I don't disagree with. It's not that I'm unhappy with what they're doing and I envy the Braves. And there was a lot of that on Twitter when the Braves won, because people are it's natural to just shoot back to Alex Anthopoulos. And I think it's kind of bogus, right? If this was any other team, no one would be thinking, oh, I wish we had Alex Anthopoulos back. No, it doesn't matter. Like, that's coincidental. So in a way, it's a mix of both, but just give me my goddamn World Series, please.
No, I'm with you, Adam. But Chris, the question, I think what you're ultimately getting at is obviously the Blue Jays are much better set up than the Braves are for a long-term outlook. But
yes.
I think exactly where I'm going with answering, I would rather be coming off of a World Series is, yeah, the Blue Jays can make the playoffs all those years, like what you were saying the Braves did, Chris. Craig. But they might not win. And they might waste a core and never win a World Series with this core. I think the chances are very, very good that they'll at least get to a World Series, maybe two. And that would be hell of exciting. But they might not win it. So I'll take the guaranteed World Series win. But again, like you, Adam, Chris, and Craig, we're all on the same page. They're doing this the very, very right way. And it should be exciting for at least the next 4 or 5 years, 6, hopefully longer, the way they've built this team up. But great questions. I like them so far. I know, Craig, did you have anything you wanted to add on kind of the way the season ended? Or are you guys ready to go on and get Adam's thoughts about the way the offseason has shaped up so far?
I'll let him go do that and I'll make my joke.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, Adam, I think the first major move that happened when you were gone was the Blue Jays re-signing Jose Berríos before some of the free agent signings happened. And I know we were in the height of recording when they made the big move to get Berríos. And the whole narrative at the time of the trade was, okay, we gave up a lot. We gave up Austin Martin, who could be a superstar. We gave up SWR, who also could be a very good pitcher. They all have their flaws, yes, but they're all very, very highly rated prospects. To get a front-of-the-line starter, a borderline ace, if not already an ace, in Jose Berríos, that will be here for the rest of this season, plus next year. And we're saying, okay, well, now you have to re-sign him or make every effort to do that. And it kind of came out of left field, to be perfectly honest. It's just like 7-year deal. He gets an opt-out after the fifth year, which is very good for him. Also good for the Blue Jays, potentially. But Adam, how shocked were you to see that got done so quickly, and how much does that speak to basically what we were just saying in terms of Berríos has bought into what the team is doing in the future? He's bought into the way Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro are running this organization. But like, how shocking was that to you to see the Berríos re-signing happen so quickly?
Did not see it coming.
Yeah.
You're right. It came out of left field, as you said. And, you know, given the fact that he was on the team for what, about a month and a half thereabouts, 2 months. That's all it took. That speaks loudly when it comes to how this organization is run. It speaks loudly to how they treat their players almost immediately, in Berríos' case, immediately. I think when we talked about the trade for Berríos, we were saying, okay, if he re-signs, then you can clearly say that it's worth it. You're getting, what is it? So eight, seven and a half, we'll call it. Seven and a quarter seasons, if he stays the whole thing, of Berríos for two top-tier prospects, that's fair. You might even win that trade.
Yeah.
There's a valid
given point. Given the fickle nature of how prospects tend to not pan out. So in that regard, I think we can look back at this trade and say with confidence that, you know, this team knows how to attract free agents. This team knows how to attract superstars. That's something that we haven't been able to say, right? And I know what George Springer is the most recent who hadn't been on the team that signed with us, you know, prior to that is Ryu. But still, this team, specifically this front office, is making strides in that department. Something Anthopoulos could not do. Let's be honest. He couldn't lure top-tier free agents to sign here. It had to be a trade and then an extension, if anything, right? So,
or to that point, just a reclamation project. Their two best players at that time frame were guys that were everybody else written off, and Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion. Just saying.
Right. And Bautista had been in the organization for quite a while. Like he was brought in from the JP Ricciardi era anyway. So
inherited wealth.
Yes. So that is something that you should look at this organization and say, you know, this aggressive approach that Chris, I think you spoke to earlier about how they're still not done and how they're going to be aggressive with all this money heading into the remainder of the offseason when this lockout ends. You should be confident. You should be confident that they're going to chase after, and you should be confident in the product, and the product being Toronto. You should be confident in what they have to offer as an organization, you know, with the areas of expertise that they're able to showcase. I think you should be confident. And plus, the young nature of this team, given the fact that the majority of this team still hasn't hit their prime. Mm. Like, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was running up an MVP. He is not even close to his prime. That is outstanding. Alex Manoah had a phenomenal season. Rookie of the Year conversation. Not even close to his prime.
More of the conversation.
Yes. Yes, not even close to his prime. You know, this is a team that you can bank on and say, and when it comes to free agents, you could say, that alone is attractive enough to them to say, I want to be on that team because they're young, they're exciting, and they have potential. I think that's even underselling them a little bit. So bringing it back to the Berríos extension or re-signing, it just made me feel fulfilled with what this organization can do and their aggressive approach. This is something that was sorely needed, right? We couldn't walk in with just on the books Ryu and Manoah. Like, really, that's really all we had to showcase out there. When you put a Berríos in this rotation, and now obviously we're going to talk about Gausman too, but it is just going to stop that. Like, now Ryu's maybe you're four. Who's going to stop that? Depending on what they do, Ryu could be your five. Think about that. Ryu could be your five. So
just to put it out there, I think that episode that we had while you were gone on that was Good Luck AL Hitters.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what it was titled, or something similar.
And so, at that point, time to wrap it up with Good Luck Pitchers in the AL too. So
yeah.
Look, I am very happy. It came out of nowhere. You can tell just in this press conference that he's excited to be here, and it meant a lot for his family. Right, he seems like a family dude, and I always like that. I melt a little bit, obviously, pulling on the heartstrings. I just had a child. So I love seeing it. I love how enthused he looked, and it was genuine. And you can tell he's genuinely all in with this team. And I didn't expect that. Usually when it comes to trade deadline rentals, they're in and out. Goodbye. And that didn't happen. So I am thrilled with this signing.
Absolutely. And speaking of Kevin Gausman, we can move on to him next. But I want to open up the conversation there to Craig. Now that we know Berríos is in the fold, gotten Adam's thoughts on that. We obviously will talk Gausman and expand on that a little bit since that's pretty recent, the signing still. What is your projected rotation order as of right now? I know that there's still the prestige of starting on opening day and getting that nod for your team, that you get to kick things off, you get to start in front of the sold-out crowds and all that, and you're anointed the ace of the staff if you start on opening day. So, Craig, as of right now, with Gausman included in the fold, and Berríos and Manoah, Ryu, and the fifth spot still up for grabs, could be Stripling, could be somebody else, what would you predict the rotation ends up being like, assuming everybody comes out of spring training healthy?
I think it's going to end up looking a lot like the projections go, Gausman first and then having Berríos and company follow. But what better of a way, in my opinion, to reward Berríos for taking that contract and going, hey, you know what? I love it here. Reward him with that fucking opening day start. That would be so cool to watch him go, that's right, I'm your boy for 7 years, and then watch him run out on the home field advantage. Because correct me if I'm wrong, we start in Toronto for the season for the first time in a while, don't we?
Oh, in Baltimore.
It's in Baltimore? Shit. Anyway, to that point, I think he gets the opening day start. I just want to see it. However the rotation shakes out after that, if Gausman becomes ace, it is what it is. But I would love to just see him get that opening day start, because I think it's just the perfect pat on the back for him. In all reality, guys, yeah, that is a very overall fair for both sides. If I think we look back at that Berríos trade trade, and then the actual contracts he signs, it's rather team friendly to the point where he obviously didn't want to flush the, I think he waited this season, does anything like he did the last 2 years. He's going to get easily anything he asks for. And just knowing what the pitching market's going to be next season, he probably would get it.
Mm-hmm.
Not that he's cutting himself off the knees or anything by any means, but to the fact that, like I said, it's team friendly enough and happy enough for him, obviously, to be getting what he wants at the end of the day. But I think the biggest thing that happened in that whole situation, too, and I wanted to bring this up to you guys. Do you remember that first game where he was back with the Twins were in Toronto, I think. Somebody on the Minnesota Twins threw at one of his new teammates, and he was one of the first people out of the dugout. I think that just comes leaps and bounds to show the culture that's going on in our Toronto Blue Jays locker room and how close-knit of a group it is, that the fact that they brought the right guy in that fit that culture just perfectly. And then he ends up resigning to the fact that he wanted to stick around with this gang as long as humanly possible. So what do you think? Do you think that was as much important as the fact that this team is going to be good? Because it was one of those things that screamed too good click to me.
I think those types of intangibles are exactly what you're looking for when it comes to a team player and when it comes to someone that's buying in. And moreover, you're right. It was his former team, I should say. And, he probably still has a lot of allegiance to a lot of those guys on the other side of the diamond. But given the fact that he's donning the Blue Jays colors, has Toronto written across his chest, that's who he's going to defend. The sword he's going to use. So I think it has a lot to do with that. When, Shapiro and Atkins have talked about building a culture. They've talked about locker room. There's a reason why Marcus Stroman isn't on this team anymore. There's a reason why Josh Donaldson, to his credit, still very good, is not on this team anymore. Because they're looking for clubhouse guys. So they don't just bring in guys, maybe with the exception of VR last or 2 years ago. But they don't just bring in guys.
They correct that quickly, though.
Yes, they did. They don't bring in guys with attitude problems. Right? And clearly they knew something about him and his team-first attitude that they thought would mesh well with this young core going into the future. And that's something that you can't mess with. You can't mess with the psychology of this team because they are still young. They're still kids. They're kids in the young 20s. They're impressionable. So you want to be able to have the guys that are, good role models and good team players and leaders, moreover, to be implementing that sort of influence on this team. And he has shown, just by the way he carries himself, I can't express it enough, in that press conference, that he is a guy that you want in your locker room, for sure.
Chris?
We're talking burritos right now, still, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. For some, I'm like, I'm Whoa. Thinking we're talking. I'm like, I thought we were still in burritos, but maybe we're. I heard Gosman in there as well.
I threw a curveball. I'm sorry, guy.
Yeah. Craig took my topic I teed you guys up on and made a new one.
Yeah.
Sorry, there's three hosts in the room.
That's right. Yeah.
Four, probably. Four.
No. Yeah, it is all about culture, and I think, like, Brios does fit the mold. And if you're not going to have somebody... I'm sure they're going to bring in another veteran player, I'm sure, but you're probably not going to find anybody quite like Semien. And I think trying to maybe not replace that, but try to replicate what kind of attitude and culture he brought was especially important to the young infielders on this team. Like, he stood in between Bo and Vlad all year for 162 games this year. He stood on second base or sometimes shortstop, mind you. But, like, he stood in between your two most important players all year long. And Bo gave Semien tons of credit for the things that he taught him and the way to carry himself on a ball diamond and in clubhouse and whatever. And, like, having guys like Barrios and now Gosman coming in, like, the things you hear about him and being a good clubhouse guy and a good role model and whatever, like, I think there's something to be said with having those guys on your team. Like, obviously, having a group full of 26 hotheads out there screaming at every single thing that's going wrong, like, this shirt might be an entertaining project going on out there, but, like, it's going to, like, collapse at the seams very, very quickly. So you need guys like that.
We're going to be the Reggie Jackson Yankees.
No, but yeah, I don't see how that could go wrong for them. And, like, let's be bygones here. He's really good fucking pitcher too.
Yes. That too. They wouldn't have thrown that giant brick of money at him if not so, right?
So, you know, like, he's a good guy, but you could throw the ball really well too. So there's that. So to answer your question, though, Brendan, before Craig took it completely somewhere else, it's gonna be Gosman, Barrios, Ryu, Bassett, or Lopez, and then Manoah.
Woo! I love that little addition.
Nope.
Yeah, that's nice. Nope.
But the only reason it's that order is to give a different look halfway through the rotation.
Sure.
Otherwise, Ryu would be probably on the bottom in that case.
Yeah. Okay, fair. That's
simply to give a different look halfway through.
Well,
but
I mean, given
point, though,
well, I was gonna say, given that means Manoah would be your opening day in Toronto starter. So I don't hate it.
Yeah, I'm perfectly fine with that. Give him that.
That'd be cool.
Sorry, Craig,
fire it up. I was just gonna say, to that point, you know, regardless of the fact we were even saying when we signed Ryu, it's great that year that we got him, he was our ace. But now we're at that point where we are actually, this is where he should be.
Yeah,
at this point in the 3-4 spot.
Yes.
You wanted like 2.5 good years out of him, and then whatever happens in the last year and a half, like, who cares?
Right.
Let him keep teaching Alec Manoah. He's the perfect guy for that. We've already seen it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go Barrios with you, Craig, starting opening day to give him that nod for re-signing so quickly. Then Gosman, then Ryu, then Manoah, and then I have no idea who the fifth guy's going to be. Assuming that it's not a trade just because we are locked down and all that stuff. As of this point, I got to say it's Ross Stripling. Just because of maybe one of the signings we'll talk about later for the bullpen being added in there. Guys coming back from injury, guys need to bounce back in the bullpen. I just think that as of right now, Stripling is their best bet for the fifth spot. But I'm still hopeful that they make an addition there. Adam, how about you? What is your rotation order as of right now? Who starts opening day? And then you can go into talking about Kevin Gosman and your impressions of when, I wouldn't say they chose him over Robbie Ray, but there might be some truth to that.
I guess flip a coin with Barrios and Gausman, who's going to be your one. I don't hate either, and we're talking about how much of a character player both players are for this team. So I don't think either one particularly cares. I'm sure they take pride in it, but I don't think there's going to be any hostility if they don't get it, right? They're here to win. They're not here to be the number one guy. But this is their contract. It's not like they're going to get a fat contract after this. This is it. Flip a coin. Doesn't matter to me. If you want Ryu to be your third, fine. I don't want to see Ryu opening the series in Toronto against Tampa Bay. So fine. Put him in at the number three. Because after the first time through the rotation, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, it gets all jumbled up.
Yeah, and I want Stripling at the five as of right now, unless they're making another addition. And if they do, then Ryu's going to be your five, because you're not going to, if you're going to get someone better, it's probably going to be there. I don't want to see Nate Pearson in this rotation, because I said it before and I'm sticking with it. Hot take, all you want. Nate Pearson is the future closer of this team. I swear to God, he is the future closer of this team. And I think they know it, because the way he was pitching out of the bullpen was good. All right. He was good out of the bullpen, and I don't want to mess with him in the starting rotation. It's over. It's done. He is the future closer of this team with that velocity. If he can just get healthy, get his location knocked down and nailed down, he has closer stuff written all over him, and that's where I want him to be. And I know that was a little out of left field there, but we're talking about rotation. Right. People want Pearson at the five. I don't want to see it. So I'm glad you guys don't either, necessarily. I'm glad Stripling is the guy ahead of him. So there's that.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys want to know my opinion.
Sure, yeah. Go for it.
Neither Stripling nor Pearson will be the fifth starter.
Who will it be?
And I'm thinking we're not going to even get another person, just because of how this lockout shit's going to screw everything up. I really am wondering, with people being where they were last year with injuries and whatnot, if somebody like Thomas Hatch actually steals a chance to start the season.
That'd be
as the fifth starter.
No.
As much they want to see it.
They won't settle. They won't settle for it. They won't. They're not going
to agree with you, but
they're not going to.
My only deal,
Craig, they're talking. Like, don't let anybody fool. There's nothing in the CBA that says that agents and GMs can't talk.
They're talking.
They're talking.
Oh, I get that.
Oh yeah,
they're talking.
But they're not allowed to put their pictures on MLB.com anymore.
No, and and like, GMs are talking still. Like.
Yes.
Things are happening in the background. Things are happening.
GMs aren't owners.
I sure as hell hope so.
No. Yeah, they're not owners.
Like I said.
They got all it, right. Dude. They might let them swoop in and take some players right now, and it might just be penciled. Right?
Yes,
whatever.
Yes, exactly. Just cannot be formally announced until a deal is reached.
Unless your name is Justin Verlander.
It might be Verlander. Who knows? He didn't sign.
No, that's official now.
It was official now. Yeah.
Oh, it is official?
It's the only person that could get away with
signing
during a lockout.
Okay.
It was
notarized.
It was like wording or something in the contract wasn't
retroactive or something.
Yeah, so it was like it was already signed, but there was something.
It's official. Okay.
Wording. Lawyer mumbo jumbo.
Yeah. You don't want to see Elvis Luciano as our fifth starter?
No. Bassiter Lopez.
Yeah, Bassiter Lopez would be very, very nice. And I would not be surprised if they make a trade for that to fill out the rotation.
Hell, while we're getting Jose Ramirez, just get Shane Bieber.
There you go.
Oh, man. I love
Why not?
That. Yes. Go
while we're there, we'll just do this.
Yes, absolutely. We're here to talk. Just throw in this guy, too. Let's do it. So, we're all pretty much all caught up, Adam, in terms of what happened when you were gone. Obviously, there was some stuff here and there. There was also the signing of Yimi Garcia for the bullpen. Very under the radar kind of signing with a guy who could play a very big role in the back end of the bullpen. I don't know if you want to expand on him a little bit, but I figured we could go to the next thing, which is we have a lockout. There isn't much in the way of news, just in terms of you can't make any signings official. As Craig mentioned, you can't show your pictures on social media with wearing a player's hat or wearing a team hat or anything like that. But let's open up the conversation. And I don't know, Craig, I'll start with you. If you were the MLBPA and you were the owners, what do you think a fair proposal for both sides would be. And you can take it any way you want. I have kind of way, I know I'm taking it in my head, where they got to come to a deal specifically around shortening the length of control you have over your players, but not by too much, because there needs to be some sort of benefit or incentive for your players to get paid earlier, but for teams also to keep those players as long as possible. So, Craig, I don't know. You can go off of that. You could go off of something else that you've thought of that would help get a deal across the finish line. But run with it, and we'll see where the conversation goes.
So, clearly, obviously, everything comes down to money at the end of the day, and that's why we're here talking about this in the first place. The owners don't want to always pony up everything, and the players are always looking for more. And this collective bargaining agreement versus many of the others, I do believe the players have all the cards. And I think that's why we are currently sitting in an MLB lockout. They're actually looking for them to fold a little bit and cave under the pressure. The rookies that have been coming into Major League Baseball over the last 5 years are obscene. Current case in point, Vlad Jr. Yes, he was one of those guys that signed a bonus in a minor league, getting signed out with Dominican Republic and everything. But to that point, he is still getting paid peanuts for a guy that literally just came up runner up for the MVP award in the American League. And we actually, the three of us, minus Adam here, actually called out the other day that if he was in the National League, he would have easily beaten Bryce Harper for the National League.
MVP, oh, definitely.
Without question. So to that point, you're putting him at basically the second best player in all Major League Baseball right now, behind only the guy that beat him for the MVP, Shohei Ohtani. So to that point, it's on the owners to turn up and pony up money. And if they don't have to, they aren't going to feel that incentive. I think the Blue Jays' incentive lies in the fact that they're trying to keep their best player happy more than anything. But to that point, they don't have to do anything. Case in point, Washington Nationals have one of the other best young talents in baseball, and you haven't seen Juan Soto get paid yet.
Yeah.
So Fernando Tatis being one of the most recent exceptions, and then obviously we just saw Wander Franco get paid for the Tampa Bay Rays. So there's some good examples, and then there's some bad examples. It's just how it is. But what it's going to come down to, and I think it's actually this simple, if they can earn an arbitration by doing X in their first season as a hitter or a pitcher, they can get it. Maybe it's that simple. If you produce more than an X war during your first season, you are now arbitration eligible during that first season. That was one of the random things I read the other day, and it made so much sense to me, because you're hearing everybody arguing, okay, well, just make them, make their pay based on their war. That's great. But okay, yeah, what if you have one of the best guys in baseball all of a sudden had a shitty minor league career, and just because he's playing on a team like the Baltimore Orioles has an MVP season on a crappy team and has an insane war? Did he really earn that, or did he actually just have a good year? There's got to be some way to track the track record from a minors into that transition. You have somebody like, Vlad that destroyed the minor leagues, or Bo Bichette that destroyed the minor leagues, runs into his first year and just has like a 3 WAR. I think we should be having some kind of a conversation about that guy getting something extra that following season.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's just how what do you guys think of something like that? Because I think that window is where this whole argument is really coming into play for that part of it.
I don't disagree with you, but I don't think the owners would ever go for it.
Just because you're arbitration eligible doesn't mean you're going to get an insane amount of money either, though.
It's you're
raised based on your current pay.
Yeah, I don't see them going for it. They like that cheap control the first couple of years, at least. And at least you can kind of project your team salary going forward for the first couple of years. Because, like, what if you have an insane first season, but then your next season is terrible?
Fall off, right?
I think that's exactly where the argument is in that situation, where I think you might have to actually have a reimbursement. Not a huge thing, but maybe some near square you're at because you didn't do this in those first 2 years or something.
Well, even being stuck at that, like, if your arbitration sets you at for whatever it is, you're at like 10 million and you fall off a cliff, like, do you go back down to 500,000 then, or 750,000? Like, the players would never
the players will never go with that.
Yeah, no way.
So maybe I didn't explain where I was thinking, right? So when the player currently goes to arbitration, they both have a number in mind. It usually ends up being something, you know, figured out in the midst of that process. And then there's only so many players that end up going to an actual arbitration for that year. I think last season, there was only like 15, 20 players in all Major League Baseball that went to arbitration. And then everything else was settled just right before it. Let's say you are making the league minimum. All right. Maybe it's written up that you can only make X much of your percentage that before, you know, that following year, if you go to that next thing. There, you know, there's some kind of a piece in there, but it's a number that they can agree on as a, oh my God, raise, and then tear it out from there. I don't know. I think it's going to be something like that, where there's all these fences.
This is why it's tough. This is why this lockout, it doesn't seem like there's going to be an end in sight anytime soon, because, Chris, you're absolutely right. Why would the owners want to give up the structure the way it is? You know that how much you're going to get pay your players. This is also why the Blue Jays know they need to win now before they have to start paying players, right? Because every one of their best players is making like 600K, and they've signed players, they've extended them. So they're like, okay, before we have to start making tough calls on getting rid of somebody like Olordis, who is going to be in for big payday soon, or a Teoscar, who hasn't yet got his big bonus or contract extension, or whoever it is coming up through the minors. That's where the decision has to come to play. But I kind of like, Craig, where you're going with it, where I wonder if, and this is where it's tough, like, let's say you're Vlad, you came up to the majors and you had like a 1.5 war, whatever the number is, that gets you into arbitration early, but you go into arbitration every year after that. You just have to qualify for it earlier. You don't have to wait the 2 or 3 years of service time before you then qualify for arbitration. If you in your year qualify for it, you go, you argue against it, you file your number, get a higher pay, and you're in arbitration every year after that, because that could encourage teams to pay your players earlier or hold off another year. Maybe he has another huge year. It's like, okay, now we've had two really big years of 7.5 war combined over those two seasons. I want to get my payday. And they'll talk about it and see, okay, well, you're going to be on another 1 year deal. You're going to be making $10 million this year. And again, you go into your third year, you continue to go into arbitration. You're better and better. Or if you get worse, the team is like, no, sorry, you're not getting $10 million this year. We're filing at $8 million. And if the player wants $12 million for whatever reason, the arbitrator comes in and says, no, you're going to make 10 again.
The arbitrator doesn't go with that, though. They won't take a median. So if they, in that case, if for people that don't understand how this exactly works, and I'm not an expert by any means, but in Brendan's example there, if the player comes in at $12 million and the club comes in at $8 million, the arbitrator will side on one or the other.
Yeah, right.
So the other piece of this whole thing that I was thinking too, because it's what, 6 years of control?
Yeah,
and then it's the first 2 years are contract renewals or something. They get 3 or 4 years of arbitration. I think it's most minor league deals these days, pending service time, right?
Something like that.
So the next piece of that is, okay, great, those years of arbitration, are you just starting it early and then the guy gets out 2 years earlier? Or no, you still have him for those 5 years and you're just getting him more chances to make more money?
See, in my opinion, and I don't know, Chris, Adam, what you guys think, I don't think the players care about where they're going to play. Like, you can come up and you can have your 6 years of control and keep the owners happy, knowing you'll have that player for a little while, sell some jerseys, make some money, and then give them a contract extension. I don't think they care about the control. They care about the money and getting paid, because teams can then manipulate it and say, no, we still don't believe in you, even though you're a superstar. We're still going to pay you $597,000 or whatever the number is.
Yeah, I think it's most important for them to have the financial security. And the length of the contract is good, because then you at least know that you're going to get paid for that long, right? You're not on these just one-year deal, prove-it type deals. I'm a little bit torn on this. Obviously, my instinct is to side with the players, and I always feel like just players make whatever you want, like make the most of whatever you can. That's the way it should be. Greedy owners, blah, blah. But then you look at the flip side. Let's just consider this offseason right now. if we were to have these arbitration scenarios where the players are making a decent chunk of change, and it's not that they don't deserve it, but given the situation with guys like Vladdy, guys like Lourdes, even though he did sign that contract, so that's just, it is what it is, but you can even say Teoscar or Bo, I don't know that they get these other deals done. You know, who's to say that they, and maybe the Blue Jays do because their situation is unique, but you see guys with the other teams, rather, with certain payroll restrictions, maybe they can't make these free agent signings that they otherwise would have to put them in contention. And I'm not saying it's a give or take kind of thing, but that's got to be taken into consideration that, you know, it's because Vladdy is making so little that compared to what he's actually worth. And Bo is making little compared to what he's actually worth that we were able to sign Barrios. We were
they
able
all
to
can
sign.
Though that that's a
but
thing.
Can
like,
they?
Yes, they so. Can. So, they can. There's okay.
There's still a bottom line.
There's always a bottom line, but like owners aren't getting all of their income from the baseball team, and the baseball team can fund basically whatever it wants. Like, it's a multi-billion dollar industry, and even these lower teams like the Rays and like Pittsburgh this year or whatever, they're getting revenue sharing that they're supposed to. Like Trevor Plouffe broke it down fairly well this week, that like they're all getting revenue sharing that is supposed to be used on payroll, and they're not all doing that. But that's also why he also explained that, like, you see teams like Pittsburgh and Arizona and whatever kind of jumped and signed a couple of, like, weird deals just before the lockout to say, oh, look, we did spend money, right? Like,
yeah.
Stop saying that. We did it.
There's, yeah. They can all afford it. There's no doubt in my mind that they can all afford it. It's just... And especially, like, I don't know, that there's teams out there that put on this charade that they're these poor teams and that they're not. Like, look at the worth of all of these teams. And, like, you look at what these owners do in their spare time and you start looking around at their net worth and the companies that they own on the side and whatever. Like, there's money there. There's tons of money.
Yeah, but that's
there.
My money.
Yeah, exactly.
Or their money,
but, like, if
say.
You don't. My thinking of it is that, like, if you're I get there's bottom lines and whatever, but like if you're not an owner, that this is why I kind of secretly love Steve Cohen, because like if you're not a crazy ass person with a boatload of money that just wants to win no matter what, why are you owning a baseball team?
Because it's lucrative.
Exactly. So they have money.
So
they have money to spend.
I'm not saying they don't. Chris, I'm not saying they don't.
You just said.
No. I'm not saying that they don't have money to spend. I'm saying there is also a bottom line. Like, I don't, and I'm not saying you're saying this, but I see segments of the Blue Jays fan base saying that Rogers is this multimedia conglomerate, which they are. And they have all this revenue from other sources. So why can't they funnel that into the Blue Jays? That's not how it works. Right.
It could be, though.
I don't know. I am not a business savvy person, but something tells me when you look at the pie chart, right, you can't just borrow from your internet providing revenue.
No, and this is exactly why I want Edward Rogers to buy the team outright.
Yes, I do think individuals should own the team and not companies. And then I think even more there's a bottom line. Right? There has to be a bottom line if it's an individual owning the team and not a multimedia company, because when you have like a company like Rogers, you can sort of finesse that philosophy in your head and say, oh, well, why can't you just take it from this? Why can't you take it from my cell phone provider? Like, you can theoretically come up with that. I don't know if it's legit. Maybe it is, but you could think it. Whereas if it's just a single owner like Cohen has X amount of money in the bank. That's it. Like he's making more, but he doesn't have like other areas of Cohen Incorporated, right? Funding the, like, it's Steve Cohen funding the team.
Have you read this book? He's got a shit ton of money, man.
I'm sure he does.
He's got a lot of money.
You just happen to have that on your desk. Billions. I love that.
I'm sure that there's, if you look at his, you know, you talk to his accountant, he can probably break down, like, you cannot spend more than this to fund the Mets.
And he'll say, fuck you, you're fired, I'm going to, and get me Max Scherzer.
It doesn't work.
Get me a yes man now.
Yes. So, but what I'm saying to you is you're taking away from other things in his personal piggy bank. Right. Yeah. And that is hurting your bottom line. It's still an overall piggy bank.
It's not my money, though.
Yeah, I know. I don't give a shit. Like, pay him whatever. That's fine.
Maybe it is if it's coming from your damn cell phone bill. Mine's like $280 a month for three goddamn phones.
Yeah. Like, I pay Bell, so it's fine.
My point with all this is that I think the players should be getting a lot. I'm thinking more on the lines of the 80% of players that are making peanuts, that are like blips on the radar, that are here in and out and maybe a couple seasons. You need to pay them.
Yeah. Therein lies the problem. Right. It's not Max Scherzer. It's not Mike Trout. It's everybody else. Like,
it's Reese McGuire.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like... It legit is.
You're 100% right.
You know,
at least we can get him an upgrade for his van or car or whatever.
It's those bullpen guys that get played against the system that are up and down and up and down and up and down. Or like, what was his name? Mike McCoy.
Yeah,
Mike McCoy. Yeah. Exactly. That was like
I have too many frequent flyer miles. McCoy.
Yeah, yeah. He was literally on a bus back and forth from Buffalo, like. Yeah. It's those
Buffalo.
Guys that are getting
it was
the
Vegas.
Shot.
Vegas, yeah.
He was on back and forth with Vegas at that time.
Oh, yeah. It was
crazier.
Like, yes. That guy got the shaft hard.
He did.
And, like, I don't know what his career earnings were, but, like...
I don't think it'd be decent, but not much.
Let's find it, but it wasn't...
Team flights, right?
Like, he is probably... doing something else right now. Like, to make ends meet. You know,
I wouldn't be surprised.
Like you look at, and it's also not just the players that are in the, I don't know. I know MILB doesn't really have anything to do. There's still minor league baseball that's going to happen. Right. But that's got to be addressed too. And I don't know if this is necessarily part of it, but you read, I don't know if you got, obviously you should remember Dirk Hayhurst, but I don't know if you remembered any or read any of his books, but minor league life is not easy. It's not.
I've been to Bluefield. I've seen it.
Yeah, it is awful. And you know that these are like, I don't know, below minimum wage that they're making just to live out their dreams. Like, something has to be done. And I'm not saying that you should pay these players millions and millions of dollars, but for fuck's sake, man, like, at least provide them with the fuel that they need in terms of food to be able to perform at an all-star level. Maybe you'll get more out of your players. Maybe you'll create more superstars by doing this. And this is just food. Yeah. This is just food.
Yeah. We're just, the fact that they were finally going to give minor league players housing. I can't believe that was still a debatable topic.
Oh, I know.
Especially to the point now that today's athlete is not just a summer that they're playing. That is a year-round commitment to even have some kind of a commitment. This isn't beer league softball players that are making it to the Major League Baseball anymore.
Right.
They just happen to stroll out onto the field. These are pristine athletes in their primes that are, you know, we're blessed enough to be able to watch play baseball. You know, it's not the same fact that what I was, you know, you're seeing back in the days of Bull Durham when we're watching movies on TV and stuff.
Yes,
or for that matter, you're not even going to see guys like playing for the Cleveland Indians. Yes, I said it in the movie Major League.
Yeah.
So,
you know, and
New York Penn guys.
Hey, for all of Mike McCoy's bullshit, he basically made $823,000.
That's nothing.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that's nothing. That's nothing for someone that provided that much service. I'm sorry, it's just not.
Can't retire. Like, he basically got paid for 2 years, which he technically had a 4-year career from 2009 to 2012, and that was it. But
I doubt that's taking minor league earnings into account, because that was
no
contract,
wouldn't
right?
be. But like, what
negligible though.
Still, compared to that, peanuts.
It's sad that like organizations like Adopt a Minor Leaguer have to exist.
Yeah,
like, they shouldn't have to exist. They're doing great work, mind you, but like, they shouldn't have to exist.
Right.
So back to where I was goofing around with the war thing. So
just to
put this in a perspective of where I was thinking is, I, you know, me being the nerd and the math guy, engineer by day, I broke it down like this, right? So there's 780 players that play Major League Baseball. Yes, there might, that's 30 teams, 26 players. Yes, there's some guys that are on peripherals of that too. So just a rough of how many are on each team, right? So the guys that produced over a 3 WAR in this past season were about 150 players. That's all Major League Baseball out of that 780. right at the line that I'm looking at here where three starts. The youngest players are Dylan Cease at an exact three, Jacob Stallings at a three for the Pirates. And then you go up just a skosh higher and you start getting into the Yordan Alvarez's, Jose Barrios's, things like that. So pretty much everybody around that three line is already guaranteed on a major league contract, already considered an elite player. The lowest guy on that is just above three. The lowest guy is JD Martinez. Ooh. So if that gives you an idea, the amount of money that is at a 3.0 war, if you somehow, to go back to this whole CBA thing, so what I threw out there, if you happen to produce a 3.0 war in your first two years, or make it a collective thing, right? The 2 years you produce this, whatever that number is, 5, 4, 6, you qualify for early arbitration.
Yeah, that's what I think could make sense. And they're going to have to create with it, right? Like, if you put it up in your first year and you hit that total, like you hit the ground running like a Mike Trout or something like that, yeah, of course, you qualify for arbitration early. If you hit a combination of 4.5 or something like that after your first 2 years, you hit it early. You don't have to wait around for the end of year three. I don't know what they're going to do. I'm sure they're talking. I don't think seeing what happened last year when they were trying to strike a deal to play for just 60 games inspired much confidence in any of us, because I know even last year when we were recording this, Crane Adam, as we were somehow keeping the show going during the pandemic and getting closer and closer to Major League Baseball, and we started talking about the deal, we're all like, if we're concerned about Manfred now and his negotiating skills to try to get a deal for a 60-game season, how the hell are we going to be confident in him for next year? At the end of 2021. So they're going to have to get creative. I don't know what it is. I think they're kind of on the same line. Pay the players. Mm-hmm. Pay them earlier. Pay them what they're due a little bit earlier. Even if it's not a significant increase, just more than the $597,000 or whatever the major league minimum is for when they get called up to the big leagues. And then, Adam, to your point, if teams can't start signing free agents or paying it, that's when you're going to have to make a decision to trade the player and be like, okay, well, we can't afford you. We'll try to get something for you. And that's what the Rays do with all their players before signing the big league deals, except for like Evan Longoria. And there was one recent, Wander Franco now. They traded them all before they had to get big league deals. So it'll be interesting, but I don't know if there's any easy solution to this.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, is there anything outside of the economics that you think would help here? Like, I'm thinking more of the superficial shit, like
shorten the season, playoff expansion, shit like that. If they want to expand playoffs, they have to shorten the season.
Yeah. I am all for expanding playoffs. Honestly, I am. Because
games at the end of the year. Give me more playoffs.
A 91-win team should not be missing the playoffs.
Yeah. One game wild cards are great for ratings and whatever, but like
should be three at minimum.
I want to shoot myself during them. Yeah. For a 154 game season, still like 162 or 154, I don't want my season for the playoffs to come down to one game.
Yeah.
Right.
Like it should, if you're playing that long, it should go to at least three games. And I loved that three game setup in short season.
Same.
Although, so, the Blue Jays got decimated.
That was the easiest playoff game I've ever watched.
Like, you can be a really good team, lay an egg in that first game, and still have a chance, at least.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Because then you're ironing out that maybe the best team does win. Because if you're thinking about a wild card, a one-game wild card, that's not necessarily the best team winning. Right. It could be the luck of a draw. Whereas a three-game series, it still might not end up that way. But if we hindsight, the Rays were the better team. It's undeniable when they had the Blue Jays in the three-game series. It's not even close. So you can iron that out. But maybe the Blue Jays get lucky in the first game and they win.
Absolutely.
They would have
that happens this year, though. We end up being the better team over a lot of these teams that went all through the playoffs, including arguably the World Series champs.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. But I also think
I have another one.
if you're losing the or needing to pay players more, opening up the playoffs to more teams helps. Like, all the NFL is a different beast, and it's only one game playoffs and whatnot, and that's the way it should be for an 18 game or a 17 game season in 18 weeks. Yeah. But the fact that the NFL has opened up a seventh seed in each conference is keeping teams in it longer, keeping your fan base engaged longer. They'll be wanting to go to games later into the season. So if you even open up the playoffs by two in the MLB, you are going to be keeping teams right around the 500 mark into early September, still engaged, because, like, man, we're only two games back of the last playoff spot here.
You'd have more teams involved in trade deadline.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
Everything. So, it increases the action exponentially.
100%. And I don't think it waters it down having another team or two in the playoffs because it's three games, and then you go on to what it normally is, but it keeps you in it longer. That benefits the teams because you get bigger crowds when you normally don't once mid-August comes around. Like, you're out of it for real if you're a terrible team by July. If you are a team, you might be able to sell your fan base on coming out to support them to get hot in September. So I don't know. The NFL did it right in my mind, because you have teams that are still 6-7, 6-8 right now that could still make it and get hot and get in. So let's go. the 7-6 Bills and the 7-6 49ers. They're both in playoff spots, but they're still right in the race.
Yes. Dude, I'm with you. I'm with you for sure.
So
I read an interesting one on the CBA stuff that, honestly, I love this idea, and I want to bring it up to the collective here, because I don't know if this got a ton of traction in the media. Jason Stark, ESPN, said the way to kill tanking would be to flip the whole draft pick position thing around and do it on order by just missing the playoffs. So your first round pick for this coming draft would be
the Blue Jays,
the Toronto Blue Jays.
You know what? It's funny you say that, because, and not to say that this is, we're so savvy, but in my fantasy league, we're in a dynasty. We don't go worst team gets first pick. You have to win the consolation bracket to win the first overall pick.
That's a great
so
idea.
So it's the same thing. Like, you're never not playing for something.
Yeah. Right. So in the same thing with this whole thing where we're talking about having a three-game playoff for the first round of the playoffs, or what I would hope to see is I'd love the wild card game. But the problem is, to me, those two teams are too good to still be battling it out for the one-game playoff like we're talking about here. Shove that down one more spot, whereas the team that maybe shouldn't get in but could get hot and run with something, them be the two teams that fight it out in that next level of whoever the hell the other people that would make it in an expanded playoffs piece would be. Like, we were talking about these teams that are dancing on the line of the trade deadline still. But you talk about having that next level of team be the team that might be the team that breaks out the following season. You're increasing competition. You're keeping people from going, well, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to be the Astros for 4 years and suck and then get all the good draft picks and then run to a World Series and then break it all down and start over again, which is honestly probably where they're going, boys. Just saying. What do you think?
Yeah. You know what? Even make that, I don't know if this is where you were going, but even make that sort of televised. You want to make the MLB draft interesting? It's not. It's not. It's not interesting at all. I don't care, because I'm not seeing these guys for like 4 or 5 years.
Exactly.
I'm never going to see them. Like, that's NBA, NFL. It's so exciting because that's your guy now. Now that's your guy. Yeah. You're buying that guy's jersey now. Right. And you're waiting to see what he can do for you in the immediate term. Like, maybe this doesn't solve the problem of that immediacy issue all the way. But if you can at least make it appear that the first overall pick matters, make that its own playoff thing, right? 100%. This is the battle for the first overall pick. And like,
hype it up. Well, then it gives you something to fight for at the end of the season. If you, what if you are in a clear, like the Oakland A's this year, right? They were in that next tier past the Blue Jays and the Mariners. If they had something that little extra to play for, even though that last week and a half, basically, where they said, fuck it, right? That maybe they lose that spot where they get the first pick, and then all of a sudden maybe it's, maybe it's not even just the first pick. That's a reward for that. And then they just go back to the normal shit after that. I don't know. But to that point, I think that's, I I saw that from Jason Stark and the people tweeting it out, and I was like, holy crap, that's actually a really good idea.
I like it.
Yeah, I liked it too.
And I'm not just saying as a selfish Blue Jay fan trying to get the first pick next year.
Yeah. You're not going to see him anyway. When are you going to see him?
Minor league guy.
So I'll ask this because I haven't, like, obviously football mode is very much in play, especially with no free agency, anything like that going on. And I also haven't gone looking for it. Have any of you seen any actual tangible news about how conversations are going? Because it's been dead quiet from so many people, passing all these guys. Has there been anything about any sort of progress? Networks only playing
freaking, like, rerun movies and...
Joe McFly, who's part of the whole John Boy thing, had said that he had word that the lockout may be ending sooner than we all think.
Really?
Yeah, what's his face? Kenny Ken just tweeted, there's an article on The Athletic saying that they're going to resume in January, and February 1st is the quote soft deadline.
Okay. Yeah. Well, they cannot afford to not play 162 again. No, they have to.
And I hope they both realize that.
And that's what's encouraging. It's like, yeah, do your lockout, get everything on the table, see what the deal is. But at the end of the day, we're still going to play 162. Somebody will cave, or they will be able to come to an agreement on both. So that's great news. That's really good.
There's been three or four lockouts, and they've all resumed before spring training. This isn't the same thing as the strike. It's not the same. Like, strikes happen. Yeah. And we've seen it, but all lockouts have been resolved. There's no reason to think that it won't be. I know it sounds like doom and gloom, and, you know, I don't know if that's intentional on here, but I have full confidence that we're going to see a full season, spring training.
Same. Absolutely.
But to have such a momentous offseason up to this point in Major League Baseball in general, to just watch literally the train come out of nowhere and put a screeching halt to it. Not a good time.
Listen, Chris said it. They're still talking. It's sort of like it's like an underground market right now. I bet you there are deals in place, and the owners are talking about, like, oh, fuck you.
I tend to agree with you, but the fact that nothing's leaked, this is like Star Wars movie level of freaking, like, vacuum tight.
Because if it leaks now, neither side, like, do you know how much leverage the owners would lose?
Yeah.
Oh, totally.
Or depending on the player as well. Or. Well, or the player, like, you basically be shunned by the players union.
Yes.
And the owners would lose all leverage. Mm-hmm. All leverage.
See what happens, gentlemen. Was there anything else you guys wanted to add on any of those topics, or shall we tee up the Christmas wish list episode next week?
Do you guys want to play the game this week, or?
Sure.
Do you want to be embarrassed as badly as Craig was last week?
I'll probably get embarrassed.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll do it for the listeners. We'll do the same thing as we did last week. So you get five questions, or five clues to guess the player. You get points for 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, depending on the clue you get it on. So we'll throw it out to all of you. Whoever gets the answer first gets the points on whichever clue it is.
These are just regular players.
My buzzer?
Just Blue Jay players, right?
These are Blue Jay players, or they have been former, Blue Jay players. Okay. Could be former, could be current, present, could be whatever.
Or a Blue Jay hat at some point. Got it.
At some point.
Kawasaki. Oh, sorry.
No. Player number one was an 11th overall pick in 2008.
Okay.
Was claimed off of waivers by the Blue Jays in 2014.
Jose Bautista.
No.
No.
That was way before that.
I'm just kidding. The 2008 thing lined up. I mean,
Made his MLB debut in 2010 with Texas. See, it's not so easy, is it?
Yeah.
Man, you guys were making fun of me. He's an ass.
This should get it. 2017 All-Star.
Well, fuck. There's only one.
It's a pitcher? Can you give me that?
No.
That was the last one.
He's not a pitcher.
I tried to forget 2017 with how bad they started.
Justin Smoke.
Smokey!
Smokey played for Texas.
Yeah.
I remember him. Did he play for Seattle?
Yeah.
Yep. Craig.
Yeah, he was a big trade target for the Mariners there, and then he didn't pan out for allegedness.
Yeah.
All right, so Craig gets 2 points. You're like already almost
a third of the way there.
Yeah.
Two thirds.
All right, so the next player played for 5 major league teams. Played every position in his career except shortstop and center field. Played with the Blue Jays from 2003 to 2006.
Orlando. Koski?
Nope.
No, Koski only played third.
One player of the week. One player of the week, the last week of 05, batting 500 to push his season average to 301.
05?
Yes.
It was, and he not play shortstop or center field. Mm-hmm. So it's not Overbay.
Highly overpaid?
Yeah.
Frank Menachino.
Who?
Frank Menachino.
Not
no.
No, it's not real.
Did Aaron Hill ever play outfield for us?
No, he only played second base.
Has a Blue Jays record for hits in a game, 6-for-6.
Frank Catalanato.
Yep.
No. I thought Frank Catalanato played center field at some point.
Nope. You even said his name, but you were like, it's
I did.
Not.
Yeah, I did. I was thinking about that outfield at the time. I was going to say Reed Johnson.
I that would have been a good guess, I thought, too. I loved Reed Johnson.
Alrighty.
I'm gonna go this guy, and I'm actually surprised that I think the only thing he didn't fit was that 500 thing. Howie Clark.
Howie Clark.
The guy played everywhere.
Alrighty, player number 3 finished his career pitching for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Latroy Hawkins.
Nope. That was a good guess though. Shoulder surgery in 2006 basically ended his career. Was claimed off of waivers by the Blue Jays in 2002. And this is a continuation of that. And pitched in 124 games from 02 to 06.
Batista? Miguel? No.
No.
I'm just thinking of that line. It wasn't Lilly, because I think he finished with the Cubs.
Josh Towers.
You don't get a bobblehead for being a guy that finishes your career, just saying.
Yeah.
This shit. just...
Oh, yeah.
Was once a pitching coach for New Hampshire.
Dave Bush.
No.
Damn it.
Name the Blue Jays pitching coach in 2012.
Pete Walker.
Yes.
There you go.
All right, so we're at a very good tie between Craig and Brendan, 2-2 going into the fourth player. Already
tossing out names.
Hey, welcome back, Adam.
Yeah. It's not Frank Catalano. No, it was.
Well, I was trying to figure out who Brendan was talking about as well. I'm like, you're like close, but I don't know if you're just like, don't know who you're talking about. Or okay, player number 4, a Dominican-born player.
What was our? It was all of the 2007 team, right?
Yeah. In his first 3 Blue Jays seasons, he went 40-11 with a 3.28 ERA.
With a what ERA?
3.28.
Okay.
He won 2 World Series.
Juan Guzman.
3 points for Craig.
Oh, wow. Man.
Love Juan.
Alrighty. Last player has won 2 silver medals in the World Baseball Classic. He was drafted in 2012. Also being a 2-time All-Star.
Much I don't want to be the guy that says it, but did Stroman do 2?
No, they won
World Series class or World Baseball classes. I only know the one.
the gold.
It was silver medals.
Oh, yeah, he won the gold.
He has led the league in complete games and shutouts in 2018.
Hap?
Nope. He was acquired by trade by the Blue Jays.
That's everybody in that time frame.
Not Estrada.
Drafted in 2012, led the league in complete games and shutouts in 2018.
Aaron Sanchez.
Nope.
No.
You guys are really digging deep for this, and you shouldn't.
2018, though? I'm guessing he wasn't aiming for the Blue Jays in 2018.
Think stupid.
If this is a Tanner Roark answer, I'm going to be very upset.
No. Well, I wouldn't do that to you.
There's nobody yelling at me on the Twitter feed at least tonight, yelling, Sean Green, it's Sean Green!
Yeah.
who made the final of the World Baseball Classic?
In 2017?
Yep.
I don't even remember.
That's not real baseball.
It was the U.S. and Japan.
Puerto Rico.
Barrios.
There you go.
So you didn't have to think that hard about this one. It's on the team
well, it's
right
too
now.
New. We're all thinking freaking, I'm on Juan Guzman still flying high.
I forgot that Puerto Rico is one, or I guess one sort of, or lost two gold medals.
Yeah.
There you go. So Craig takes it this week with 5 points.
Zero
you
points.
Eclipsed your 3 points last week.
You can
week.
Put it on the board. Yes.
Yeah. That was fun. That's a good game, actually. I do like that. It gets you thinking.
You got it. Some of them, you really got to dig deep. You really got to dig deep.
Not so much, apparently.
Some of them, not so much.
Well, gentlemen, Adam, it's great to have you back, sir. It's awesome. Chris, you have the invitation to join whenever you like, including next week's episode, where we will be doing the annual Christmas wish list episode. And I'll just tell you guys now, you can't wish for the end of the lockout to be at the top of your list. So dig deep. Think about what you wish to see the Blue Jays do when the season does resume, or next season, or whenever it is. You can wish for that, because you can wish for whatever you want at Christmas time and see if Santa Claus.
But days at the dome.
Yeah.
No leaky roofs.
Yeah, exactly. No leaky roofs. No ice falling.
Correct
from
me if I'm wrong. Does that mean that in our normal CBA actual freaking nonsense around here, does that mean that Adam Corsair is back to host just in time for the Christmas episode?
Yeah, CBA.
Tying that lineup right.
Not tying that on purpose. That's why he didn't want to host this week.
Dude, I'm wearing my ugly Blue Jays Christmas sweater next week. Again,
like a true host.
I will do that for the wish list. Yeah, I'm down. Let's do it. And that's when I'll talk about Kevin with my whole chest.
Excellent. Yes.
There you go.
You could wish something on Kevin. You could wish that, whatever you want, because it's a Christmas wish list. But, gentlemen, everybody, thank you for tuning in. As always, we're the official podcast of Jays Journal and Stadium Scene. Not the official podcast of Stadium Scene, but shout out to Stadium Scene, as always, as well. Any parting words before two claps and a Ric Flair, gentlemen?
Welcome back, Adam.
Welcome back,
thank
Adam.
Thank you for having me back. It's good to be back. It's like riding a bike. Let's go.
One, two, three.
Oh, sorry.
Woo!
Woo!
Let's go. Woo! Blue Jays.
Oh, we need more kind of timing.
Can we still do this? Get the booster.